Last night, as you know, there was a full lunar eclipse. It was less than 24 hours ago. And so I wanted to give a talk that would be somehow relevant to a lunar eclipse. And, you know, the funny thing is, I know a certain amount about astronomy, but I don't know a lot about astrology. And so I actually had to Google, you know, what does a lunar eclipse mean in astrology? And I was reading, it said a few things, but then one of the things it said was that a total lunar eclipse brings very potent energy to anything involving intimate relationships. And my first thought when I read that was, oh my God, I don't want to talk about that. At which point I realized, of course, that has to be my topic. You know? And so tonight's topic is intimacy and the sacred. And it's, you know, inspired by the lunar eclipse. So I'm going to start in a very odd place. I'm actually going to start by reading the Bible. And I always like to ask, here I am pulling out a Bible here. I'm going to read a short passage from this. What reactions do people have? Any reactions that anyone wants to express the fact that I'm pulling out a Bible in a meditation group?
I shouldn't say this, but mine was like...
Very good.
Yeah.
You might like this passage. This is from the book of Psalms. This is the beginning of Psalm 139, a Psalm of David. O Lord, thou hast searched me and known me. Thou knowest when I sit down and when I rise up. Thou discernest my thoughts from afar. Thou searchest out my path and my lying down, and art acquainted with all my ways. Even before a word is on my tongue, lo, O Lord, thou knowest altogether. Thou dost beset me behind and before, and layest thy hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it. Whither shall I go from thy spirit? Or whither shall I flee from thy presence? If I ascend to the heavens, thou art there. If I make my bed in Sheol, thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the outermost parts of the sea, even there thy hand shall lead me, thy right hand shall hold me. And so I read that because it's in many ways a very classic statement about intimacy and the sacred, about, you might say, this deep knowing of the sacred. Now, of course, that formulation is in a system where there's a personal God, where God is viewed in a personal lens. And, of course, through the sweep of world religions, there are some places where some religions where God is personalized, somewhere where the sacred is not personalized, it's the Tao or something like this. And then, of course, Hinduism has it both ways. I think we are, to some extent, aware of some of the problems that happen when the relationship with the sacred is personalized. Certainly the danger is that if I make God personal, then I'm going to wind up projecting all my personal stuff, you know, all my parental stuff, all my unresolved issues are just going to get projected onto God. And I'm going to think that's how God is and that's how the world is, you know. And I think I would say that, you know, I certainly have respect for all religions, religions in which there is a personal God, religions in which the sacred is viewed impersonally. I wouldn't say that the sacred is necessarily personal, but I would say that the sacred is necessarily relational. And that's different. In other words, it's our own capacity for relationship, for connecting with others, for relating to others, that most attunes us to the sacred. You know, religions have all these, rules, you know, like, you know, love thy neighbor as thyself. And as, you know, at one level, it, it, you know, certainly a nice way to behave, and it supports a system of ethics and that sort of thing. But a more mystical understanding is that when I'm in that energy of loving, accepting, forgiving others, I'm, as it were, using the muscle that allows me to connect to the sacred. Or perhaps another way to say it is, I'm cultivating the vibration in my being that most aligns me with the sacred. And so we are very much relational beings. And I mean, this is something that neurobiology reveals over and over again. We are just simply wired for connection at our deepest level. So what does it mean to be intimate with the sacred? Well, again, in a conventional Christianity, you know, and especially the more disconnected forms of Christianity, God is way up there. And so to be intimate, the sacred is to be intimate something way up there and has nothing to do with down here. I think the insight of Buddhism and the insight of really all the mystical traditions is that to be intimate with the sacred is to be intimate with life. And what does it mean to be intimate with life? Well, part of it is, of course, something along the lines of mindfulness practice and just being aware, being present, showing up in life. But part of it is intimacy always connotes something much more emotional, something much more vulnerable. And so it's really that willingness to be touched by life, to be touched by the beauty of life, to be touched by the pain of life. And as I've said in other Dharma talks, it's very hard to hold that openness and that deep sensitivity unless we cultivate good boundaries. You know, if I walk around with very, very sensitive and lousy boundaries, that's a recipe to be clobbered. But when we have very healthy boundaries, then we can afford to be very sensitive and open to the world. We can afford to be more intimate with life. And you might even say that from the point of view of a system like Buddhism, we're called to intimacy with the sacred. We're called to intimacy in life. In other words, we find our deepest being through being intimate with the sacred, through being intimate with life. And if you're not a little bit scared by that, you don't really understand it, you know? So I want to read a couple short pieces of poetry that I think exemplify this idea of being intimate with life. One is a short poem by Alfred Lord Tennyson, which you may know. Flower in the crannied wall, I pluck you out of the crannies and hold you here, root and all, in my hand. Little flower, but if I could understand what you are, root and all in all, I should know what God and man is. And this whole idea that just knowing something completely brings us to the experience of the sacred. And again, this is very much reminiscent of all the Zen stories, you know. Tozan is weighing flax. Someone comes in and asks him, what's the Buddha? He says, this flax weighs 3 pounds. In other words, his experience is so intimate with that he's having an experience of the sacred. Another one that's a little more passionate from Mary Oliver, who passed away last week. And this is just a line from one of her poems. When it's over, I want to say all my life, I was a bride married to amazement. I was the bridegroom taking the world into my arms. I don't want to end up simply having visited this world. And so this is intimacy with the sacred, intimacy with life. Part of being intimate with life is being intimate with ourselves. Intimacy with oneself is about being comfortable with one's own deep vulnerability, being willing just to sit in one's deep vulnerability and see oneself for who one is beyond one's masks, you know, this sort of thing. You know, it's funny. We all have these mental stories about who we are. It's very human, you know. And in these stories, we kind of like to cherry pick the facts that support our story and kind of neglect the facts that don't support our story. You know, we're actually very, very skilled at making these very edited kinds of stories about who we are. But some part of us just knows. Some part of us knows the truth. You could say, you know, it's a part beyond ego, a part that just knows without agenda. And part of intimacy with oneself is just looking at oneself in that mirror, you know. Maybe I'm not the story I'm telling myself because I've left out this, this, and this, you know. Carl Jung talked about the shadow. And the funny thing about the shadow is all the, it's all the flaws, all the sort of the problems I don't want to look at. But the shadow is also all the gifts I don't want to look at, you know. There's almost a, there's a light shadow and a dark shadow. And really taking in both of that, that I'm worse than I think and I'm better than I think at the same time, you know. That's part of being vulnerable oneself. And so, of course, one way also that I can be intimate with myself is by being intimate with others. And it's this very deep way that intimacy with myself allows me to be intimate with others. Intimacy with others allows me to be more intimate with myself. It's this back and forth. And at this point, I guess I really want to clarify, it might be obvious, but the intimacy I'm talking about is emotional intimacy. And I will say, I find it a bit disturbing, actually, that we live in a culture where the word intimacy is a euphemism for sex. What that tells me is that there are a lot of people who just aren't ready for emotional intimacy. They're defended against it or, you know, for whatever reason, they don't have access to it. But that's a deep human need, and they feel that need. And so they try to satisfy that need by having sex, you know, which is going to be something inherently unsatisfactory. Now, I would say that, of course, intimacy exists in many human relationships. There can be intimacy in friendship. There certainly can be intimacy, you know, with a therapist, a life coach, a mentor, you know, this sort of thing. But arguably, the deepest kind of intimacy happens within romantic relationships. And I would say that it's the nature of sexuality really to deepen that intimacy. We have this other term for sex in the English language, to make love. And that one I actually find quite accurate in some ways. Because when two people are emotionally intimate and they're engaging sexually, they are building emotional connection. First of all, there's just all the process of the oxytocin, which creates bonding. A lot of times things that begin casual wind up not being casual simply because of oxytocin. But part of it is also, it's the nature of orgasm to completely disarm us, to completely open us up. And if people in emotional intimacy are approaching it in that way so that they can have that experience of being completely disarmed, then it's a kind of touchstone, you know, a touchstone for how open we're going to be with each other. Intimacy with others really involves all the chakras. The one chakra that I will highlight, I've already touched upon it a little before, is the third chakra. Very important to have good boundaries in intimacy, you know. If I'm entering the intimacy, merging, you know, needing permission, needing the other person's approval, you know, codependent, all that, it's not going to be as powerful in intimacy. The most powerful intimacy is when I'm powerful in myself. And this is true for each person. I can say, I don't need this to feel good about myself, but I'm choosing to open to it. That's very powerful. So intimacy with others certainly involves trust, but more than trust, I think the word I would use is intimacy requires innocence. Innocence is the deep trust that whatever happens is in goodwill, that there's just this sense in my bones, I know this other person has my back. Because we're human and we're gonna have misunderstandings. It's just the nature of being human, and one person's gonna do things that's gonna tweak the other person, and that's par for the course in being human, you know. But just to have that deep knowing that when I'm tweaked, it's not about, you know, this person's trying to ruin my life, but that this deep knowing they're doing what's best for them, and I have to work with that. You know, I have to figure out why it is that I was tweaked by that. Ultimately, I would say that intimacy with another is a spiritual practice in itself. Intimacy only happens in the present moment. If I'm being intimate with somebody and then something happens and I'm triggered and I go off into story, I'm not intimate anymore. I've left the present moment, you know? Intimacy is, in many ways, unattached to outcome. You know, if I'm aligned with the part of my mind that has an agenda, I'm not fully showing up. I'm not being fully vulnerable and fully open if I'm attached to an agenda. Yeah, and I've heard it said many times that certainly a long-term relationship or marriage is just a continual exercise in forgiveness, you know. I think the fantasy about intimacy is that two people will always be lovey-dovey and it will always be paradise, you know, and the reality is that, you know, like in meditation, you know, you get knocked off your center and you're constantly bringing yourself back. In intimacy, people are getting knocked off that center and they're constantly bringing themselves back to, again, fully open, fully trusting, you know, even though it's the nth time that one or the other has been hurt. You know, very, very hard to do. And it's funny, all of these are connected. Our intimacy, our ability to be intimate with others, our ability to be intimate with ourselves, and our ability to be intimate with life. All three of these are deeply connected with one another. So at this point, I'll hand out the quote sheet, which has the quotes that the poems that I read earlier. I used to be a high school teacher, so I always have handouts. So I won't read the Tennyson poem again. John Joseph Powell says, "It is an absolute certainty that no one can know his own beauty or perceive his own sense of worth until it has been reflected back to him in the mirror of another loving, caring human being." It's one of the many ways that we need each other. Dr. Joyce Brothers says, "Real intimacy is only possible to the degree that we can be honest about what we are doing and feeling." The Christian mystic Henry Nouwen says, "Intimacy is not a happy medium. It is a way of being in which the tension between distance and closeness is dissolved and a new horizon appears. Intimacy is beyond fear." You know, and it is true that when you're fully alive, when you're aligned with that place of deep vitality within you, you don't know fear. You know, and I think we've all had those moments that we're just so excited or so engaged that we're not aware of fear. I'll read the Mary Oliver again just because it's so great. When it's all over, I want to say all my life I was a bride married to amazement. I was the bridegroom taking the world into my arms. I don't want to end up simply having visited this world. So wonderful. From Mike Iaconelli, I don't know much about him. Spirituality is not a formula. It is not a test. It is a relationship. Spirituality is not about competency. It is about intimacy. Spirituality is not about perfection. It is about connection. The way of the spiritual life begins where we are in the mess of our lives. Yeah. From Deborah Tannen, who is one of the world's experts on communication. Communication is a continuing balancing act, juggling the conflicting needs for intimacy and independence. To survive in the world, we have to act in concert with others, but to survive as ourselves, rather than as cogs in a wheel, we have to act alone. And so again, this incredible balance that also exists in an intimate relationship. What do I need? What does the relationship need? And both needs have to be honored. Manus Friedman says, it's like the old question, do you lock your house to keep people out or to protect what's inside? Should a person act modestly and dress modestly in order to prevent intrusion from outside, undesirable things from happening, or to preserve and maintain what's inside, the delicate and sensitive ability to have and maintain an intimate relationship? A very interesting perspective there. From Wendy Wasserstein, the trick is to find the balance between the bright colors of humor and the serious issues of identity, self-loathing, and the possibility for intimacy and love when it seems no longer possible, or sadder yet, no longer necessary. And it is a very deep kind of pain to just, and I know there are people who just say they've just written off romance in their life. Like that just, intimacy, that's just not something I need. It's very sad. Marion Williamson says, enlightenment is the key to everything. It is the key to intimacy because it is the goal of true, because it is the goal of true authenticity. From Ayelana Vayantz, in my mind, marriage is a spiritual partnership and union in which we willingly give and receive love, create and share intimacy, and open ourselves to be available and accessible to another human being in order to heal, learn, and grow. From the great Irish priest, John O'Donoghue, real intimacy is a sacred experience. It never exposes its secret trust and belonging to the voyeuristic eye of a neon culture. Real intimacy of the soul, and the soul is reserved. Aberjani says, most people are slow to champion love because they fear the transformation it brings into their lives. And make no mistake about it, love does take over and transform the schemes and operations of our egos in a very mighty way. From David Dieta, a book I would highly recommend, the whole point of intimacy is to serve each other in growth and love, hopefully in better ways we can serve ourselves. Otherwise, why engage in intimacy if your growth and love are served more by living alone? Intimacy is about growing more than you could grow by yourself through the art of mutual gifting. Brené Brown very simply says, the intention and outcome of vulnerability is trust, intimacy, and connection. Stephen Molyneux, I don't know much about him. Successful relationships are those relationships where conflicts are successfully resolved, and in fact, people's intimacy, closeness, and in love are enhanced through the resolution of conflicts. I will always become closer to my wife and to my friends when we have conflicts and work through them successfully, because conflicts will always arise. They are an opportunity for intimacy, self-knowledge, and greater connection. Yuno Diaz says, you can't find intimacy, you can't find home, when you're hiding behind masks. Intimacy requires a certain level of vulnerability. It requires a certain level of exposing your fragmented, contradictory self to someone. You run the risk having your core self rejected, hurt, and misunderstood. Michael Bassey Johnson says, true love is not a hide-and-seek game. In true love, both lovers seek each other. And it's true that this is not only true in romantic love. Loving life is not a hide-and-seek game. Loving the world is not a hide-and-seek game. We can only love by showing up. Mariah McKenzie says, holy intimacy is fostered with the marriage to two commitments. One commitment to sitting in quiet solitude with oneself, and the other to sitting in rapt attention with one's mortal beloved. And so again, the equal importance of what is true for myself, what is my own truth, and what is the truth in the connection, and honoring both of those. Michael Murdod says, the ultimate goal for us all is to experience and integrate, one, a union with God, two, a union with our own being, mind, body, and soul, and three, potentially a union with partners.